listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, January 19th, 2022, already 19 days in. My name is Michael Kelly and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here, as always.
Oh, as always, glad to have you. And glad to have you joining us live in the chat. Appreciate seeing you each week. And thanks to those that have the time to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, before getting into tonight's topic, we will begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right. Tonight, we're going to be getting into some ancient mythology, how it relates to modern metaphysics, and we're going to get go down some interesting avenues. We're going to talk about, you know, kind of just touch briefly on, you know, some of the broad aspects of maybe, you know, how the ancients viewed life, death, and the veil. The interesting and provocative notion of extraterrestrial life coming into contact with early humans, what kind of impact that may have had, hypothetically, and how that might be relayed to us from the ancients and their perspective through whatever sources remain. But, Dr. Hunter, I'm really looking forward to this one.
I am too, but let's start off with a comment in the chat already from Jamil that might start us off pretty well. He said, "Hey, Dr. Michael, I saw a great bumper sticker the other day, quote, end quote, we're all here because we're not all there."
Good eye. That is good. I enjoy that. And it's, you know, it's such an interesting concept, consciousness, isn't it?
It, you know, is.
Awareness, it is. Being.
But. Well, I think in the cycles of life, Michael, I think there's cycles, small cycles, and I think there's big cycles. And when we're talking about the ancients, I think we're in another cycle that we can, or a pinpoint of time that we can relate to some things in ancient mythology and how we're viewing the world. And I think a lot of things have carried over. I think that I think religion got us a little off track. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, well.
But in the last 2,000 years, because it's very dogmatic and very mental, as opposed to more spirit and experiential. But that's where I go with the ancient mythologies, is that it's more how you relate to nature, how you relate to the universe, how human beings would feel that connection. And sure, you know, okay, you want to think Odin is just some mythical made-up creature, that's cool. Some people might think that Odin was one of the, you know, the head honchos of another alien species, right?
Well, and so, the terminology, you know, from a different realm, You know, what exactly. One calls a realm, one calls a dimension. And yeah. Real quick, I just want to interject, because you were just saying something that was essentially what I think was supposedly coming from Aristotle and an excerpt from the Metaphysics, you know, the origin of the term metaphysics from some of the philosophies of Aristotle and Plato and things like that. But there was a sentence that is interesting, if not cumbersome, to say. And I will simply say this. If there were no other independent things beside the composite natural ones, the study of nature would be the primary kind of knowledge. But if there is some motionless independent thing, the knowledge of this precedes it, and is first philosophy, and it is universal in just this way, because it is first, and it belongs to this sort of philosophy to study being as being, both what is and what belongs to it, just by the virtue of being. Now that, I think, could have been said better, and I think you said it a lot better, Dr. Hunter.
I don't know. I just kind of summed it up. And, yeah. Well, I think that it's natural, and I mean natural in the biological sense, spiritual sense, that we want to connect with life and life forms and connecting with nature, connecting with the universe. And again, I think that's a natural experience. How we intellectually decipher that, I feel, is, my view is, of course, conditioning, right? And reality then is subjective. And in my view, however we want to interpret the ancient writings, whether it's the pyramids or, you know, mythical places, apparently like Atlantis, it's relative to the time period. And again, as I say, dogmatic religions, you know, really took a curveball, I think, but there still is this residue of wanting to, no matter what we think, we still want to feel.
Well,
and I think that's where the ancients had that connection and where we're the same.
Now, when you say ancients, I mean, human beings have been around anatomically as humans for, what, tens of thousands of years at a minimum?
Yeah.
Are we talking about prehistory, or we are talking about Mesopotamian cultures, the Egyptians and peoples like that, the early known civilizations and belief systems?
I think largely when people refer to ancient, they think of the pyramids.
Right.
Or the Greeks and so on. For me, ancients goes back to the beginning, you know, and again, the cycles of evolution that occur. But what is it still? I mean, whether we go back to, you know, hunters gatherers and not seemingly organized, it's still about family and it's still about you have to eat, you know, and, you know, what does that storm mean? What does this mean? And so there's that connection with nature and the connection with conceiving of gods or great entities greater than yourself and or equal to yourself, however you view that. And so then I think fast forward in history and how we've evolved. I happen to be of the mind that we've not been alone on Earth, myself, you know, as far as...
Meaning non-hominid species?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, it's, call them aliens, call them, I think we're the aliens, but, you know, interdimensional, extraterrestrial beings. And I think we've been visited many times, and it's contributed to our evolution. And that's, to me, how that's relevant. However, somebody else might say it's... just more interesting to think, well, how did they build those pyramids? What is the science? How did they get that science? How do we learn from that science?
You know,
again, cyclically, you know, there's been the demise of each of those old civilizations and the why of it. So I think it's the how does this play into what we know of as ourselves? What are the good points, bad points? You know, how do they self-destruct?
You know, it's so funny. I'm listening to you talk, and I get so excited because you keep touching on points that I was thinking about. And I'm like, oh, that one gets me excited, too. And then, oh, no, but that's a great idea, too. Because, you know, I was, you know, thinking about the, you know, well, the pyramids being one thing, you know, that's a magnificent feat of engineering, let alone who did it. But, you know, let's, you know, I think there's the obvious, you know, case that it took some kind of knowledge or something like that. But, you know, something interesting that I'd heard recently about that was that they found that, in the Great Pyramid, many of the stones, it could be a form of limestone concrete that the Egyptians poured into place, which is a fascinating idea. But really, the there is so much to human history, well, that is lost to history. It's not, if it's not recorded, you know, it didn't, we don't know what happened. And that's why I love this idea or this perspective that you have, Dr. Hunter, when you're talking about how dogmatic things come in and shift it. Many of us in the modern age, our mind goes to the Abrahamic religions, to the ultra-Orthodox and fundamentalist aspects of Christianity and Islam and et cetera. But really, you're talking about, you know, really when the Egyptians came about, you know, they as a society with ancient beliefs had very strict dogmas about gods. And even though over their, what, roughly 4,000-year history until the Greeks of Alexander conquered them. Other before that, they were ruled by the Persians and the Assyrians, etc. But they had a pharaoh in place that whole time that was Egyptian. So this society exists for 4,000 years, and they had thousands of different gods. And who knows in that time how they were influenced, you know? Who knows who taught them how to do limestone concrete?
Well, you know, there's an extraordinary young man these days, Matthias De Stefano, and people can look him up. He is on Gaia, by the way. There's a few shows, but and on YouTube. But he claims to, and there's recordings about this. When he was a boy, he came in with memory of having lived during the time of the pharaohs and how that happened, and extraterrestrials and that interchange, but he also remembers the time before with Atlantis. And he talks in a way that is so calm and natural, you say, he really does remember, yeah, you know, or has this memory. And forgive me, I can't remember, I think it's Thoth that he was talking about, where he's depicted as a man with a bird's head in the hieroglyphs of Egypt. And he's saying that the people of the time had such a strong bond with this particular bird, that was, in other words, your spirit animal. And a lot of indigenous communities believe that you're connected in some, you know, natural way to an element, you know, life or an element. And so Thoth was the bird. So that's why they always drew him with the bird's head. It's not because it was an alien that had a bird head. It's because it was a natural you know, this connectedness. And I went, whoa, that kind of makes sense. So I, you know, kind of going, there's a lot of things that this young Matthias says that, you know, I'm saying, okay, that's another angle. That's another way of looking at that, where you're combining, you know, some science, and he does talk about that science of the day, with the philosophies and the belief systems, which is metaphysics, and how the pyramids were built, and what was going on in the time, and who overthrew who, and
oh, so many people overthrew so many people.
Yeah, so, and I think this is relevant for us. Why are we so fascinated with the past, particularly Mayan cultures, or, you know, the Egyptian cultures?
Because there's,
what is it that fascinates us so much?
They're shrouded in mystery, and yet we have evidence. Well, the Egyptians, you know, infinitely more so. The Mayans were a fascinating people and very advanced, but they existed much more recently to us than the Egyptians did. The Mayans, their, you know, great structures we can time to, I think, after the Common Era. But don't quote me on that. Take it with a grain of salt. Google me. But on that aspect, the Egyptians, you know, for just thousands of years, a relatively similar culture, even though they added some gods, took some gods away, some things shifted, the boundaries, what was, you know, Egypt and Kush and things like that, Khartoum. But it's shrouded in this mystery, and it is, you see these immense, impressive artifacts from this ancient civilization. And, you know, thinking of ancient mythologies and how people viewed life, it really was fundamentally different of how human beings viewed life and human life, you know, those many thousands of years ago. Think about sacrifice, both animal, which is much more common, and the more rare human sacrifice, but it happened.
Well, I think that one thing we have to keep in mind is whatever we are surmising, it's through our today's intellect.
Right.
And there's so many other factors. Many years ago, I came across a very old Bible. And I'm quite fascinated by Bibles, by the way, because of the stories. But in this Bible also had, you know, the kind of those old little ink drawings. There's a name for them. It slips my mind right now. But it also talked about the geography, the foliage, the plants, the other plants, what was eaten. And it's a whole different time period. So it's not just humans that have evolved. It's our geography and all of our life forms have changed.
Oh, absolutely.
So to imagine what it was, let's say in Egypt, everything looked different, experienced differently than what we are seeing it as. We have to think about the whole experience of it, not just that linear, oh, what were they trying to say? And it's, so even I'm sure scientists, and they have to admit that whatever they are, you know, kind of assuming mm-hmm. the Egyptians meant by this or this, it's just through the intellect and the information they have today, and it's still subjective.
Absolutely.
So this is why, because I like to hear somebody like this young Matthias who's speaking about it from an experience, which gives me a whole new enlightened moment of, well maybe. And what is the lesson of that? You know, Zach Frame has just said in the chat, there's this idea that the ancients had it figured out. But that's kind of true. We think that they had something we don't have, you know, or that they had it figured out. But again, those civilizations ceased to be,
well,
and then something else evolved as a result.
Those people didn't cease to be. Those people, their society evolved into something else.
Yes.
It continued to grow into something else. But so civilizations as an idea, you know, rulers come and go, systems come and go, the people evolve. The people don't come and go, they remain and evolve. We can see that through genetics. You know, I think I'm loving the chat tonight, too. Jamia was pointing out some interesting things. Top secret UFO projects declassified on Netflix, an idea that extraterrestrials may have been here to help humans evolve.
I've seen it.
Yep, I haven't seen the show, but I've heard the theory, and I've always found that an interesting one. And the, you know, there's also the fact that there were more variations of near human, you know, that just very, very close cousins, Neanderthal or whatever the correct non-American pronunciation is, that you see in documentaries from Europe or Denisovian? Denisovans?
I'm not sure.
Well, they existed in Oceania, the Pacific area, Asia, and all three sentient species of hominid existed at the same time and, you know, interbred and intermarried, or whatever the definition, intermated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, and these kind of things, you know, so when you talk about the context, right, of
yep.
how did these ancient Egyptians feel? What was their daily life like? How did they view the world? You know, mm-hmm. they took things to be fact, and they believed it to be true at the time. That mm-hmm. completely changes the context and the view of the message. And that is key. And so one of the things that I do find, well, that cautions me, and I have a fascination with these things, and I think, you know, these kinds of accounts, absolutely plausible. But there's that part of me that says, but you don't know. And
well,
go ahead.
I think it's Irma Eknar in the chat. I think that's Irma. If I correct me if I'm wrong, she says, "Did the ancients have it figured out, or were they learning and evolving like the rest of us?"
Right.
And see, and I think that is part of the process. I happen to view Earth as this playground, you know, where a playground of creation. And what do we do with that party?
Right.
You know, it's like beaming down. Okay, look at all the, you know, the beautiful resources here. What are we using? So it's to stand back and imagine from a big picture of what it is we are trying to figure out here as spiritual beings now in an, you know, an organic body mm-hmm. and on this organic sphere with all these wonderful things. So, and again, that's the axiom, right? It's a paradigm. It's like a life view.
You know,
if you're viewing your life from a very three-dimensional place, you think all that other stuff is just out there and over there, but really you're living that.
Well,
so, and it's an evolution.
It is. And I love that because human beings were just human beings then too. And we have come a long way in terms of, you know, our social evolution to where we're much more tolerant, and even though it doesn't feel that way, even though it doesn't, and it has gotten worse than it has been in, you know, more recent human memory. We're on a downward trend when it comes to certain things. I can't deny that. But if you put it in the context of thousands of years, we're less likely to attack one another for cultural things and more likely to accept one another for cultural things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vikings, God love them, interesting, fascinating people, fascinating culture. They did not accept other cultures. When they came in, they had their cultures, except for the Normans. They actually converted to being French.
Mm.
But that's just a little aside. You know, the thing is, I think when we think of the ancients as having it figured out, I think there is something to that in the sense that the ancients were more connected to the primal survival natural world. The stakes were felt on a daily basis. Yes, human beings are a relative apex predator, but back then it wasn't as relatively high, and you had either humans to worry about, you had the natural elements to worry about. There was just not as much infrastructure in place to protect you from the natural world, so you knew the stakes. You knew on an instinctual level more of the hard truths, perhaps, or just the reality core truths of life in the natural world than we do today, because we've separated from it by successive waves of luxury. Even nomadic peoples had advances in technology that made life different.
Well, that's certainly contributed to our view. I think ultimately when we think of the ancients and, you know, we're trying to figure them out, so we better figure out ourselves. Is there a mystery? Is there a secret? But I think if we understand that we are in this evolutionary process, and maybe there's just lessons to learn from all of that. But again, what does science know? What is it continuing to learn and discover?
Mm-hmm.
And well, how do we incorporate that science into our essence of spirituality?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And our metaphysics of it. And I think that's ultimately the key. You know, Charles is saying he believes in reincarnation and we were the ancients at one point in time. And I don't disagree with that. That's what this young Mattias talks about. And I think that we are them, they are us, and everything, if we're all connected in the universe as well, it makes sense that we're just continuing to evolve.
You know,
I'm not so sure that technology was different then. It was different expression of a similar thing of what we're all trying to do. Make sense?
Well, we all have the same goals. Even today, we're doing the same thing they did 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
We're trying.
I mean, may not have had little metal screws, but, you know, they had other kinds of ways to join logs and, you know, bolts.
No, there were significant, and that's kind of a misconception. You're absolutely right. There's a misconception that there was not advancement for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Admittedly, you know, the more knowledge you accumulate, everything is interconnected. So everything pulls off one another. When you have a deep understanding of biology, that affects engineering and all kinds of things. So, you know, one of the reasons I've been an advocate for NASA space exploration is because people say, what is that doing for us on Earth while we have so many that are in need? Well, first off, it's a minute portion of the budget. You know, I think, why are we arguing over this when we could be looking at other priorities? But nonetheless, the advances we've gotten in medicine and knowledge and science have been transformative. And
I agree.
You know, another thing.
Well, this is an example, if I can inject here, as Zach is saying, makes a comment about astrology, you know, and I want to make this point. In, let's say, 2,000 years ago with the naked eye, or even till recently, you know, you look up at the sky and you see all these planets. So you assume that there's X number of planets. We now know through science, like you're saying, Michael, that there's an infinite number of planets, you know, and what's just in this solar system, right? So it's, we're seeing more all the time.
What I'm trying to think, there was a, in Dr. Hunter, if you know this, stop me before I look it up, but there was a monk who was imprisoned because he had visions that he said were from God of the universe, where he saw it in its infinite nature of different worlds, of different suns, of different, you know, reality.
I think there's been a few of them that have been.
But he was somebody that was kind of a precursor to, like, I don't think, Copernicus and things. I can't remember his name. I don't know enough search words to find it.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about things like that in terms of, okay, because really, you know, we started this whole idea about how are we tying the ancient mythologies and what may have happened to the ancients and how they viewed the world to our modern idea of metaphysics. And I think, you know, we pull a lot from the ancient ideas. And, you know, we were talking about unity of consciousness. And, you know, I'm sorry, I have to... Long-time listeners will know that I have to throw some nerddom around sometimes, and I happen to be watching an episode of Star Trek. There was a Beta Zed, which is a species who are telepathic, and they were having a discussion about telepathy and everything. And somebody was basically talking about the idea that all consciousness is joined, and we're all connected to it, and we just don't realize it, but we can kind of feel it. And every species can kind of feel it. They just have an ability to tap into it better, which was, I think, an interesting idea. And it's been stated before, of course, but just that idea of a super consciousness for, is it a society? Is it a people? But, you know, and these are questions we've been asking for thousands of years. And we've been asking them in different ways. We've learned a few more things about the natural world, which influences our view on metaphysics, on the study of awareness. I think that the idea about awareness and what it is to simply be might have been more common back when you had to simply be, because life was far more a fight for survival. So you existed in the moment. You existed in that more than we kind of do today. But the questions have become more refined. We have a wealth of different sources across the world, across different cultures and different histories, and all are to be celebrated. We talked about the Mayans across the sea from the Egyptians. We didn't even touch on the Indian subcontinent and the wonderful mythologies. We're talking about ancient astronauts and ancient aliens. We didn't even talk about some of the most interesting stories that come out of the Indian subcontinent, let alone the different metaphysical ideas of the East Asian peoples. I know, you know, Buddhism and Hinduism have a lot of just these ideas of existence and what it means to exist, at reincarnation, existing as different things, different
and
forms
I might
of
say
life.
There's a lot of reference in those cultures to, you know, starships. And there's a lot of the artwork and depictions of things coming from the sky and machines and so on. So all those, I mean, it's all there, but you're only going to see what you want to see. And I think that's the bottom line. But it's all there to help us open our minds if we're looking.
Absolutely. You know, we will only see what we believe to be true. And if you have a pre-existing notion that something is true and you see something that contradicts that, you're more likely mm-hmm. to cast it off. For example, fundamentalist Christians, I can only say this from personal experience. I'm not trying to pick on Christians at this particular moment. But they, you know, look at, you know, UFOs or ghosts and say, oh, no, those are demons. Those are demons trying to mess with you and draw you away from God's vision. Belief is a powerful thing. Belief shapes reality, and a perception of reality shapes behavior. But
well, the thing is to believe in everything, I think, is, and when you believe in everything, you start to know what you really are.
Right.
And who you are. Because you have a nature, and you have a character and a personality that's grown to get along with the world, but who you are is really a free sovereign being of the universe, kind of come down here, and maybe there's truth to all of it. It just doesn't matter, because it's true to you, and that's just got to be okay. You know, if that's the way you want to see the world, but I don't know how you're going to feel when the ship lands on your
Those are demons trying to fake you out. It's just they're really good at it. But it is interesting how much more accepting we are of extraterrestrial life today than even 50 years ago. And I think fiction and cultural change has a lot to do with that, in the sense of artists inferring on what might be, which is the role, the evolutionary role that artists play. Art is not something that is just an extravagance, a luxury. Yes, you need to have a certain level of civilization per se, of coordination, so that you can have somebody who has time to devote to that kind of art. But it prepares human awareness and human thought for what is possible. It allows us to expand our minds, and it allows us to think of things in a whole new way and re-examine some of the things that we, you know, call tradition, and, you know, what value do they play. So, you know, and these are things that have been consistent throughout human history. There have always been those who play that role of asking the questions to examine the here and now, and to really think about it on a deeper level. But I know we're kind of going a little over before we go into our next segment, where we pull inner oracle cards and tarot cards. But this has been a great conversation. Any kind of last thoughts on
them? Well, we'll all get a rude awakening and how to see the world differently when the aliens land on your house. That's all. No, I'm kidding. I don't know.
Hey.
You know, I think that, look, where we're at right now, I look at the state of global affairs, and I say, I don't know what's going to shake people up. You know, it's because we are in a shakeup. We are in a shift, a reality shift. I think so much depends where we're at on economics, because people have to eat and they need a roof over their heads. And, you know, it's Maslow's hierarchy. If you can't.
This is true, but they're not going to have a roof if that alien lands on it, so, you know.
I know. But I think aliens. I think that in the everyday conversation for people is, how are we going to get through another day financially?
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to expand your consciousness and take in more information and feel who you are in relation to today's world, when you have so many physical things to take care of. But that's where, and I know that's where a lot of people then go to religion, because that's where they feel that community and that sense of, you know, shared suffering, right? And I think that's what a lot of people are doing right now. To me, you raise that up and the suffering changes color. And
I like the way you say that.
Well, you know, I think everybody here has got a story in one form or another, and it's just how we are viewing our experience. You know, somebody I knew recently said that she's being biopsied for cancer, and I looked at her and I said, well, once the shock wears off, then you say, oh, cancer's something to do. And, you know, and
that is a way to look at it.
And then she looked at me kind of in a different way, and I said, well, it's just something else to do. And because that is life. And if you don't take that, you know, personally to heart, like I really don't think that that victimization works for us anymore, no matter how we're suffering. And it's, you know, expanding our consciousness to say life is suffering in some form or another, because we each have our own stuff. But we are in a changing world, and if we can step up to be an example of, you know, managing our pain well and living in our pain well, because we're all in pain in some form.
Absolutely.
And because that whole idea of being in pure joy is nonsense.
No.
There's still always some heaviness in your heart or memory that you hurt with, or it's all, everybody's got a story. And that's what we have to remember, that we have a story. And that's in raising the consciousness. I can't imagine. So this is where I go to, Michael. Oh, I can't imagine. Like, I don't want to remember living 500 years ago and needing a dentist.
Oh,
you know,
so. I don't even want to imagine needing a dentist today, let alone.
So I think that we've come a long way, and there's so many things we take for granted now.
Absolutely.
So, I love the notion of continued expanding, you know, of that who we are, and letting go more of all this nonsense that we, you know, this trivial stuff, really, when it comes down to it, but necessary, and getting our priorities straight.
Well, that's the key, isn't it? And, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned happiness, pure joy all the time is a ridiculous notion. You know, what is happiness? I was making a comment to somebody in a conversation the other day that if I had to live in a world where I couldn't, like, argue or have, like, a spirited debate with somebody who seriously disagreed with me and have that kind of, you know, that would be like a hell for me, where everybody just got along and everybody agreed on everything. What would I even do? I don't know.
Oh, Michael, you're just entertaining yourself. Let's draw some cards, Michael. We got some names in here. I've enjoyed tonight's conversation, too. It's fun. So maybe next week we'll talk more about aliens, because I like that.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Starting the, trying to catch up as I talk on the tally of names. I know we have Dr. Raven first. So
we do.
I'm going to do a little multitasking.
Order, in this order, I have Raven, Charles, Edward, Jamil, Wendy's Charles is here, and Sidori. I hope I'm saying that right. So let's start out with Raven.
We definitely have Ronnie in there, too.
Oh, Ronnie. See?
Yep.
I'm glad you said that.
But, all right. So let's go ahead and start with Dr. Raven. I have number 28, Do No Harm, Do Right. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Raven, I'm in a conundrum. I like that. It's my favorite word of the week, to be honest.
Good one.
I pulled the King of Hearts here. Now, pulling the King of Hearts for you and that, you know, do right, is maybe there's something you're trying to figure out about masculine energy and the soft side of masculine energy, or trying to figure something out about the experience of men. I know I'm going way off on a tangent, aren't I? But that's what I get from that. So I hope this is making sense to you. So it's go into the place of understanding and compassion rather than the place of defense and, you know, feeling upset or confused about it and conflicted. So it's explore it to better understand it, and maybe that's your own masculine energy, and maybe that's that of the male gender. I'm not quite sure there, but I think that you're in a shift in thinking, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
I don't know, that one's over there, Michael, but that's what I get.
All right. And let's see, we have Charles next.
All right, Charles.
And just a shout out to Charles, making a good point. I saw earlier in the chat about Australian Aboriginal art and pointing to ancient astronauts. Maybe something we'll kind of follow up on. All right, Charles, I have number wild card number 9, blank. Whatever it means to you. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
Well, when you have the Jack of Diamonds with that, Charles, it could be that you're thinking about a career, what type of work, how you might want to change your work, looking at value for value. How can you do what you love to do and still bring in an income? And my sense here is you might be juggling a couple of things, but the blank card says, look, you can go forth in any way you like. Just, again, project for that and apply yourself. But I see that you're on your way to living it the way you like and what would be better suited to you. So taking the steps, I like that.
All right, great message. All right, so we have Dr. Edward next.
We do.
I have number 3, be who you are, walk your own path. Let's see. You are a uniquely designed, one-of-a-kind, universal being, equally entitled to all good things, the same as others. Drawing this card encourages you to be who you are and to walk your own path, not comparing yourself with others. Give yourself permission to accept who and what you are. Move forward in the direction you need to take that best fulfills yourself.
Edward, I got the 5 of clubs, and I feel like something, you're having overcome something, and there's kind of a celebration to a little, like milestones are never small, but this will be a milestone for you. Something that's improved, something is more confident, having overcome something and feeling really quite comfortable and proud of yourself. So I think you're having a moment to celebrate yourself. So that's very cool. That's what I see.
I love it.
Okay, right. We have Ronnie next. I figured out where Ronnie came in, and I missed it.
All right. Hey, that's why 4 eyes are better than 2 or 6 if I'm wearing glasses.
Well, if I want to inject this. Thanks for saying what you have. Raven in the chat, she says she feels that message. So... because it was confusing to me the first time we were talking about. So thanks for saying that. It makes me a little more comfortable when I go out in a limb over there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always great to get that kind of feedback.
Get it. Okay, right. Ronnie, what have you got for Ronnie, Michael?
Past, present, future, number 4.
Ooh.
All right. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are, 1, you are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, past circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor. Good one.
Ooh, this 7 of diamonds on that, Ronnie, I love that. What I like about that is taking that moment to congratulate yourself that you came through it and you're doing fine and that you're now moving into your future. So there's this wonderful movement of energy. And what I also get from this is you're on your own frequency celebrating yourself and no matter what anybody else might think of you. And, you know, cause, oh, wouldn't you know, there's always somebody to try and challenge your, you know, say something otherwise. But the past, present, future is you can look back, see it, you're in that moment, and you're still moving forward. And I'm on the limb again, Michael. I feel like July is a turning point for you. So whatever you're working toward, keep going because there's good things to come.
I love it. I love it when you get the intuition. And just take it from my personal experience, gonna come true more, way more often than it does. All right. So we have our card keeper, Wendy, next. And Wendy, glad to have you with us. Last week we had thought Wendy might have been, you know, maybe cooking up something delicious or seeing a movie. She was not. She and the family took the private Learjet for a little vacation, so they got away for a bit. Wendy,
so we're skipping over to Wendy's Charles, and we'll do Jamil right after.
Okay, so we'll do Wendy and Wendy's Charles back to back.
Okay, and then Jamil.
You got it. So
I got a list here, Michael. I got to follow my list.
Did I skip somebody?
It's okay.
Oh, gotcha. Well, anyway, Wendy, I have number 29 for you. Pay it forward. And it's something I already know you do. 29. Living with gratitude and responsibility extends generosity to others, even with random acts of kindness that offer no self-benefit except the satisfaction of heartfelt kindness. This may be a time to calm the spirit and lift the heart by giving forward, without any particular reason, reminding yourself that love is the center of all life. Is there a way you can pay it forward right now? Good card.
Well, it is, but with the page of clubs here, I feel like somebody's going to find out that you did a good deed and going to be surprised. So it's through this message of communication, something that you have contributed, passed on already, somebody, you know, talks to you about doing something, say, yes, I've done that before. And they go, oh, you have. So there is this, I feel like a circle here of you giving more forward, but you've already given forward in that way. That's interesting take on that. So I like that. So you're going to be in these conversations, Wendy. And, you know, I just want to say good for you. Wendy's Wendy. You know, Wendy's just a cool girl.
Oh, no doubt about that.
Now, Wendy has a Charles, and Charles would like, we'll do them back to back.
So, Charles, for you, I pulled number 30, greatness to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies unique self-actualization and self-completeness and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself of the question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? Remember, you are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Whoa, you got the moon in support of that, Charles. So, again, I love that limb on a tree I go out on sometime. I feel like you're onto something that could be life-changing, something that you've wanted to do or thought of doing, and you might get the opportunity. See, the moon is all about things that are hidden and secret and information coming to the surface. So something that comes out into the open now, you're saying, oh, yeah, I'd like to do that. Now, it could be a little bit unnerving, but in the greatness to deliver, who are you and what would you really like to do? I just feel like in these next few months that there's opportunity there and doors start to open and a little bit of spiritual restlessness there. So I say, hey, you're in this one life, so go for it. That's what I say.
But well, I love hearing it, and you couldn't have said it better.
So now I had had Jamil after Ronnie, so let's do Jamil now, Michael, shall we?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's who you were saying, yeah. I skipped.
Yeah, that's okay.
Gotcha. Well,
we do this from time to time. It's hard to keep track of that chat room, man. It's full. So, well, and that's for the benefit of people listening in the archive.
Actually,
if you can ever come live, it's really fun.
I'm not a petty person. I'm not, but I am a petty person, and Jamil was after Wendy. I double checked it in the chat. So, you know.
Oh, really?
Okay. You know, point, serve, match,
okay.
Check.
Be petty and correct me. Go ahead.
I
wrote it down wrong. There you go.
Hey, doesn't copping to it get, you know, buy me some kind of grace?
Hey, that's okay. I can take it.
Anyway, okay. Jamil, love to
Let's
have
do
you
this.
here. Love having you
Thank
guys here. Jamil, I have number six boundaries for you. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
You know, Jamil, I got the Seven of Spades, and the first thing that comes to my mind is avoid the conflict. You might be in a situation or a position where it could be antagonistic, and I'm not saying directly at you, but a situation, and the message here is rise above it. Just know your boundaries, know what your levels are, and you'll come out on top if you take that high road. And I'm just saying, don't enter the conversation when it goes nowhere. Like, sometimes I have to say to myself, no good will come from this conversation, you know, and then come back later if you have to. But I think this is a kind of a one-time thing I'm feeling. So it's just keep that in mind, and it'll go better than you think if you just, you know, divert. Divert. So that's what I say in the boundaries thing. Okay. Now, we have Sidoria.
I have Dr. Jeff and Audra as well.
Well, okay. So, see, I was just being, like, really nice and kind because I knew I'd get corrected. So, tell me who's next, Michael, for
God's sake. Oh, gosh. We have Dr. Jeff next. But Dr. Jeff,
okay,
I'm happy to pull a card for you. But Sidoria, we're going to get to you, and your card's going to be great, I promise.
Sure,
I have number 38, open-mindedness.
All right, Jeff.
An open mind is sensible and grounded. An open mind avoids preconceived notions, especially ones that are based on a personal agenda, a pet theory, or a preferred belief. An open mind is not gullible or credulous. Rather, an open mind thinks critically and searches for additional possibilities. It absorbs knowledge and searches for credible solutions and conclusions.
Strength is the supporting energy, Jeff. Open-mindedness and strength, it's just an affirmation to you. And being open-minded. You know, Dr. Kelly, in his work, really teaches about preference and principle, and I think this is one of those times to bring it up. You have the strength to endure. If it's just preference, who cares? Principle, you know to stand up. But I think part of this is you also have the strength to do what you want to do, and there may be some challenges. You have to use different strategies, but be open-minded to that and continue to move forward because you've got this. So that's what I said.
Good message. And Jamil pointed out we have a lot of positivity and a lot of good messages coming out tonight. A lot of I'm trying to scroll through now. There's been a lot of great chat. I was going to see how you put it. But, yeah, a lot of positive stuff going on. So I love hearing it.
Cool.
And, all right, Audra, I have number 34, take and release ownership.
Mm.
Ownership and entitlement are not the same. Ownership is taking responsibility with a healthy attitude. Entitlement is expecting more than what is earned. Further, codependence is taking an unhealthy ownership for other people's problems and feelings. This may be a time to reflect on owning only what is yours and releasing the rest.
You know, Audra, I love the Fool. It's the first card in the tarot, at least the major arcana. And that's all about, you know, leaping forward, being a little bit impulsive. Hopefully you don't fall off a cliff. That's a downside of it. But, you know, it's new beginnings, new starts. But when you have this take and release ownership and the Fool is a support energy, it's don't be caught up in what other people want of you. That's what I want to say here. They might have some great, you know, ideas for you. But if that's not for you, then just kind of state your claim and never mind. So that take and release ownership, they have a good idea from themselves. You don't need to go on their ride either. So it's just knowing what your start points, beginnings, and new energy is, that may or may not coincide with somebody else. So just keep that in mind.
Well, I know I'm sounding like a broken record here, but that was well said. And, you know, just on point. So
it's not me, it's the voices in my head.
Well, they are smart as heck, let me tell you.
I know. Usually smart.
Man, I wish I had somebody helping me out like that. All right. Sidoria, I hope we're saying that correctly. I apologize if not, but I have wild card number 5. Don't hate. A low energy signature refuses to learn more in order to better accept and understand others. Hate grows in this low frequency. The result is fear, demonstrated as the need to criticize and control others. This is how wars begin, whether that's between in relationships, within families, or between countries. Understanding does not mean one has to agree. It means rising above the low frequency to do no harm, do right to yourself and others.
You know, this is interesting because the Four of Hearts, the Four of Cups, as we know, every symbol has its light and dark side, right? The positive, the negative. Ordinarily, this Four of Hearts would be an opportunity, something being given to you, a message, you know, an apparition, you know, an opportunity. Anyway, with the Don't Hate card, it could also indicate to me that it feels like someone wants to take something away from you, Sidoria. And, you know, that can be a bite. Sometimes if somebody wants to take credit for your work or, you know, wants to take away something that you feel that is yours. And, you know, for the grace of age, I just say if people want it that bad, knock yourself out, you know, and give it to them, take the high road. And I think that will serve you better. It's don't, you know, harbor some negative. It's just, but I don't forget either. And all these lessons or these experiences are given as lessons so that we don't repeat it, you know. And so I hope that makes sense. There may be a situation here where you feel like you're not getting your just due. And just rise above. It's never mind. So, and if it isn't happening now, I suspect it'll be. Could be any time now. So I hope it makes sense. You'll have to get back to us and let me know what that means. So,
yeah,
have we got all the names, Michael? Did we cover everybody?
I think so. I was just taking a look through. There's been such great chat tonight that, you know, and so many points. I wish we could make some more shout-outs. But, yeah, I hope it was worth the wait to get those cards. I hope that they connected. Dr. Hunter, I know that your intuition usually pretty spot on. And maybe one day.
Sidoria just said she's having a hard time relating, and I appreciate that. And it's like, you know, I'm not always 100%, but, you know, maybe it's something that's coming up here. So whatever it is, I know you'll handle it just fine, Sidoria. You'll be good.
Absolutely. We always just face the challenges in life as best we can, and we move forward. And we always learn something from them. We take something along with us. But, no, I was just saying, you know, during these cards, and I, you know, I appreciate people that are thanking me. And for my part, it's math. I shuffle the cards, I pull it out, and we have some, you know, great messages for each card that I get to read to you. But Dr. Hunter, she has the you know, the pressure on to, you know, she has that connection that she makes. So I say in this case, you know, I'm happy to be here to add some interesting ideas and, you know, the mathematics, I think, and statistics play out in probability through, you know, what's kind of shifting in our lives. But I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you, Dr. Hunter, for your insight all these weeks.
Well, I might just add that Wendy has said, Wendy normally, you know, keeps track of the cards everybody gets. And she says no one has had the same card yet this month. And I want to tell you, I think we're all in a big energy shift, everybody. And I've talked to a couple of friends of mine, and they're feeling the same thing. We are in an energy shift. And so, you know, be who you are. Be you. no matter what, no matter the peer pressure, no matter the economic pressure, no matter all the other pressure. And look, I get it. Everybody's got their own dilemma. But just be you. Reach deep in your heart. Stay good to you. And I think that is part of what we're learning through this energy shift.
Absolutely.
But we'll talk more about aliens next week.
Hey, how, aliens and, you know, some interesting ideas and how they precipitated energy shifts in human cultures. That's on a lot of things. But so, hey, it's been great having you tonight, Dr. Hunter. And thank you to everybody in chat. Had a wonderful back and forth, wonderful conversation. And we have... a lot of things, you know, coming up. We're going to talk kind of a part two on this topic next week. We're in the stages of looking at a guest speaker, and we're finalizing some dates on that coming up. So we're looking forward to that.
We're going
to
be talking about near-death experiences in that one, Michael. That'll be fascinating.
It's going to be interesting. So we have some interesting things in the pipeline. Looking forward to it. So I guess I'm kind of wrapped up. I think this has been a great discussion. I'm looking forward to part two next week. Any last thoughts, Dr. Hunter?
No, everybody have a great week, and don't let anybody push you around out there.
Well, darn tootin'.
That's right.
Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.